Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. Very excited to be joined by NL Commissioner Nick Sakevich as we have a boatload of recent news, positive news, coming out of the league over the course of the last month. It feels like time to catch up, even though the start of the 2021 season is still months away, which is unfortunate given that in a normal calendar year, we would probably be getting underway right about now. We wanted to gather all the intel in terms of what's going on with the league. So first and foremost, Commissioner, thank you for joining us. How are you doing on this Thanksgiving week?
Doing great, Terry. Thanks for having me and good to be with you to catch up.
No doubt. Well, so I think the piece of news that starts this whole conversation is the recent announcement that the NLL is targeting the beginning of its 2021 season in April. And I know that there were a lot of factors that went into that. Can you just explain a little bit what some of the thought processes were and what some of the necessary next steps are, you know, as we kind of get more specificity toward, say, how long a season will be, when you'll target a championship, all those questions that follow, we are targeting a start in early April.
Yeah, you know, it's been quite a journey since we put a pin in the season last year and decided to just end our 34th season. And as many people know, we went straight into planning our 35th season. And it really has been an extremely fluid situation and continues to be a bit fluid, although I think with the announcement of vaccines coming out and therapies that have drastically reduced the mortality rate, we kind of see light at the end of the tunnel. And we've been working really hard to try to get our 35th season kicked off, and it's been extremely difficult. I mean, we have 13 teams competing in this upcoming competition, and we literally have 13 different sets of local restrictions and possibilities. You know, the U.S. Canadian border being closed and not knowing when that might open also plays into it. There's been an enormous amount of work that's been going on behind the scenes. We've formed medical committees and scheduling committees and protocol, COVID protocol committees that are all working very hard. And we just landed on a target of early April to launch our season because we think that given the trajectory of everything, that looks like the most likely window for us to be able to play. Having said that, you know, we are prepared to pivot. The one thing we learned in all of this is you've got to be adaptive, you've got to be innovative, and you've got to be prepared to adjust on the fly. So we've learned a lot during this period.
You mentioned it, but putting a pin in the 2020 season was a difficult, but I think in retrospect, in many people's opinion, prudent decision, given all of the issues you just laid out. One that I think a lot of fans probably don't think about is that closed border and particularly how difficult it can be to cross that border. As you reflect on what March entailed and the work that's been done over the last 8 months to position the league for its 2021 season, what do you think the legacy of that canceled season is going to be?
You know, I think it's in the rearview mirror. It's you know, it'll be, you know, an item on the timeline, the historic timeline of the league, which is quite long. You know, we're, again, 35th season. It's a big, you know, anniversary for us. We're more focused on celebrating our 35th season than we are really looking at the past. I think at the end of the day, it'll be a mark on the timeline, as we've had many, many marks along the way over the years. And there's no doubt, I think everyone will remember 2020 as quite the year. And we just are, you know, really looking ahead with new team in Fort Worth, and we're very close to our 15th team. We may be the only league to announce two expansion teams in the middle of a pandemic, and we're just thankful. It's a great week to be thankful for everything we've got and what the future looks like.
You brought up one of the core components of this conversation, but I do want to table that for a second because there's another element of that forward-looking component of it that kind of bridges 2020 and 2021 that I think is particularly interesting, and that was the entry draft. And it occurred in the fall, basically when it normally would have. Obviously, it had an unusual component to it, which is a lot of the forecasted high draft picks were able to return to their college programs for another season. And so there were some decisions made around the ability to retain players' rights and everything along those lines. But certainly it's also a key component to the ability for teams to build rosters going forward. What was your perspective on the way that the draft, as all professional drafts have happened since the pandemic started, happened remotely? What was your perspective on how that occurred?
Well, you know, it was great. And again, you go back to learning. Typically, our entry draft is done as a live event with many people attending and players attending, and it's a big show. It was a big show this year, but it was virtually. Our viewership was unprecedented for this entry draft. We had a lot of scrambling to do because of the rule. We had to change some rules. We had to adjust some rules because of some of the high draft picks were intending on going back to school, and teams had to make some very difficult strategic decisions, which they did. And I think that just added to the intrigue around the entry draft. We pulled it off, and kudos to our broadcast production team who pulled off a flawless event. We had all these virtual cameras and production packages sent out. I think over 60 of them were sent out to players, to myself. I was literally holed up in a hotel in Florida doing the live event in a hotel room behind a camera in a virtual setting. So it was pretty extraordinary, and I'm just so proud of everyone at the league, our content team. Joel Feld, who is our director of broadcast, pulled off what was a really great event.
So you mentioned it. There are a handful of other kind of mechanical things that have gone on this offseason, including the election of a new president and vice president of the Professional Lacrosse Players Association, and maybe we can touch on that and you know, some of the other elements of the CBA and how free agency unfolded and all those sorts of things. But I don't want to bury the lead. And last week, the brand identity for the 14th NLL team, the Fort Worth expansion team, was announced, and it is Panther City Lacrosse Club, which pays homage to a century-old legend of a panther roaming the streets of Fort Worth that was supposed to be derogatory about the sleepy town, but it has ended up becoming a point of pride. So, the Panthers, we had known for several months that Fort Worth was the 14th location, and now we know that Panther City LC is what we'll be calling them. What can you just outline the way in which Fort Worth emerged as a target for NLL expansion, how that idea became a reality, and all the steps that have unfolded since?
Well, the Dallas-Fort Worth, North Texas area has been on our radar for quite some time. I want to say probably going on 3, maybe even 4 years, because we monitor the growth of lacrosse in various geographic regions. That's number one. And everybody knows the growth of lacrosse in North Texas has been exploding year on year for the last probably decade, really now. And so it's always been on our radar for that reason. Another reason is geographically, when you look at the footprint of the NLL, we needed a team in the southwestern region, and the Dallas-Fort Worth area was perfect for that. And even our expansion going west with San Diego, now we have Fort Worth. Our 15th team will most likely be a Western Conference team as well. Our expansion to the west is really driven by a few things: geographic location and creating a more balanced footprint. So that's been on our radar a long time. With Greg Bibb and Bill Cameron, the ownership there now of the Panther City Lacrosse Club, we could not have found better owners. Bill is an investor and the NBA with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he's also the owner of the Dallas Wings, the WNBA team. Greg has built a sensational front office of roughly 30 people that are all so impressive in all the different areas of ticket sales and marketing and broadcast and arena operations. And they've just really did an amazing job last week. I was down there for that unveiling at Dickies Arena. Combine that with Dickies Arena, which is going to set a whole new standard for arenas in our league. It is just a, it's words hard to describe the quality of that arena. It looks like it was built for the NHL. Its size, its finishes, its premium seating, all the amenities within that building. I really haven't seen an arena like that ever. So I think when you pack up all of those, you know, ingredients, you really have something special down there. And that event was fantastic, really professionally done. And we're just so proud that Bill and Greg are owners in our league and will be launching a team here in our 36th season.
So you threw out a pretty big matzo ball there that I want to come back to, which is the notion of a 15th team and having a prospective market already targeted for it. But before getting to that, just in terms of the arc of the way in which this is unfolded, both in terms of the idea of expansion and adding new teams, adding new markets to the NLL's footprint, as well as, you know, diversifying and increasing the professionalism of the ownership table, for lack of a better way of putting it, when you took over, and I apologize if I get some of these details wrong, because there's been so much activity in the NLL that it can be hard to keep straight. But if memory serves, when you took over, it was a 9-team league, and since then, obviously, 4 franchises have been added. But it wasn't necessarily a linear path, because in addition to I believe the first kind of big expansion announcement was San Diego, the creation of the Seals and Joe Tsai's inclusion in the group, as well as shortly thereafter the return of the Wings to Philadelphia and bringing in that Comcast group as the leadership entity, and then expansion with the New York Riptide, as well as the Pegula family after having acquired the arena that the Rochester Nighthawks played in, subsequently acquiring the Nighthawks, Kurt Stires, the owner of that team, moving or creating an expansion franchise in Halifax, and that brings us to the 4 additional teams, and then the 5th obviously in Fort Worth. But then in conjunction with that, also an ownership change in Vancouver to bring the Warriors into the portfolio of the group that operates the NHL franchise there. That's a tremendous amount of like high level activity in a 3 to 4 year span. And I know that there were some fundamental ideas when you took over by virtue of your experience with the MLS and understanding the value of that national and, in this case, international coast-to-coast footprint. I mean, I think when San Diego visited Halifax last year, I tweeted, I'm pretty confident this is the longest trip that any pro sports team could make. And it's reflective of
4 time zones.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
4 time zones.
It's reflective of just kind of both the traditional and non-traditional strategy that you and your front office have employed in order to grow and develop. So when you think about all of that, what comes to mind?
Well, first and foremost, extremely proud of what's been accomplished over the last 4 years. It was a lot of work. When I walked in the door, we were a tiny entity with, you know, basically 9 teams, a couple of them struggling, you know, financially suffering, Kurt being one of them in Rochester, and Denise Watkins playing in a tiny little arena on the outskirts of Vancouver. We fixed those too. We found Kurt a magnificent home in Halifax, and that team at the tail end of last season was approaching selling their building out in a market that lacrosse was new to. Lacrosse wasn't known in Halifax until the Thunderbirds arrived, and Kurt put together such an amazing brand, and kind of a lot of is reminiscent of what Greg has done with the Panthers, and really created traditions in the marketplace. And I was at one of their last games, running into, you know, when shut down the season, and it was almost sold out, and those people were wearing merchandise and going crazy. The Canucks organization took over a struggling organization. They've had it now for 2 years. They've had triple-digit attendance growth year on year, and are really recovering that team. That team was, you know, very poor on the floor. Didn't, I think for 5 years they had traded away all their draft picks and really was struggling on the floor. They were headed to the playoffs this year, and they also had their first round draft pick in a long time at the entry draft this past September. So really proud of all the work, all the new owners we brought in, our blue chip, A+. And that leads me to really fundamentally, when you talk about the arc of expansion and what has transpired in the last 4 years, it's really two fundamental strategies. First and foremost, it's about ownership. The one thing I learned over 21 years in MLS is that without strong owners, not just financially resourced, but intellectually resourced, smart, strategic, able to make key investments in things like sports betting and new revenue streams, e-commerce, like Fanatics, and creation of investment in staff to be able to actually execute on that is really important. That's number one in any growth league like we have. And if you look at the makeup and quality of the owners that have come into the league, they've been nothing short of blue chip. And that's a standard that we set strategically. We're just not letting anyone be an owner in the NLL anymore. It's a very high standard we set. And the second thing is the target to get to 16 teams. 16 was kind of a magic number in MLS. Why? Because it gave the league a nationwide footprint and ability to scale up sponsorship, broadcast rights, other revenue streams. And if you look at the history of MLS, when we hit 16 teams, which was me in Philadelphia, I happened to be 16. Philadelphia was the 16th franchise in MLS. There was a hockey stick effect for MLS. Its value in commercial value as well as the franchise values really skyrocketed from team 16 to now. I think they're at 30 teams, and so that number is, you know, kind of a magic number for me strategically coming into the league along with our staff. We've been very focused on getting to that 16th team because we know it's scale. The sport of lacrosse needs more scale. It needs more, we use the term tonnage, number of games, number of broadcasts on TV. This is what sponsors are looking for and broadcast partners are looking for. So we've always been laser focused on getting to that number 16 and then building a strategy to go beyond that eventually, you know, on up to what Major League Soccer has done, which is gotten to 30 teams.
You teased it before, but it seems like you've got a clear line of sight on the 15th team. I think that the fairest and most pertinent question at this point is, with Panther City arriving and targeting play in the 2022 season, do you foresee that being the case for the 15th team as well? And is there anything else that you can tease us with in terms of where or who might be involved?
Yeah, you know, we're having really high level confidential discussions and negotiations, so I can't disclose where, other than the fact, you know, we're going yet west, young man, and the sport, it continues to grow in places like California and the Pacific Northwest and the Southern California area and those areas. So I'll just leave it at that. We have a lot of interest. There's been a lot of interest, which actually is a little bit surprising to me throughout this period, but also not surprising given what we just talked about and that arc of expansion and interest. The sport's not going away. It's growing, and it's growing at a pretty rapid pace. And I think a lot of savvy investors that want to invest in sport kind of look around the corner and see what's coming, and it's pretty clear that lacrosse is coming. And so we have a lot of interest. And so that's exciting. And we, like I said, we may be the one of the only sports league to launch or expand two teams during this pandemic. And then, you know, once we get past this pandemic, we see a clear sight to get to 16 teams and achieving our goal. The 15th team will not play in 22. We're not going to do two teams in one season anymore, or at least for the foreseeable future. It's extremely taxing to launch two teams in one year for the league, for the teams, and it doesn't serve the best interests of everybody to launch two expansion teams in one year. It was okay to come out of the gate with Philly and San Diego and Rochester and New York, just to get ourselves some scale, but don't want to do that again. I think we want to focus on one team a year to expand and really pay attention. We've developed onboarding strategies and a service to the new teams coming on board. You know, Greg has benefited greatly from us being able to focus on just one team coming in next season, having a long runway to do that as well, to help build up season ticket base, to help build up his commercial business, to develop the brand that he just launched last week, and having like a 12 to 18 month runway to launch an expansion team is really, really important, because you only have one chance to make a first impression in your home market. So the 15th team will come in the 2023 season.
Nick, I've been recording podcasts for like 10 or 11 years, and I don't think I've had a segue into an ad read that is as natural and easy as this one. So obviously, if you're listening to this show, it's called the Inside Lacrosse Podcast, and if you're listening to this interview with the NLL Commissioner, you're probably both passionate about lacrosse, passionate about the NLL, and certainly understand that both of these speakers currently are as well. But what you might not know is that for the first time ever, you can get official National Lacrosse League gear from Fanatics. It is the official shop for the NLL fan. Wherever you live, whoever you root for, it is your place to get NLL gear. And we know that Panther City gear was up. I mean, the thing about Fanatics that definitely separates it, and I'm going to ask you a little bit more about this relationship once I'm concluded my obligatory ad read, but the thing about it is how quick turn they are. So it came as no surprise that when Matt Kinnear and I were recording last Thursday, there was already Panther City gear available on Fanatics. And you know, for us, in terms of you know, what we kind of need to rep and need to wear, we had an opportunity to dabble in some of the Fanatics gear, and I figured that being in Baltimore, where, you know, the NFL team is purple, and my lack of purple gear to wear on Purple Friday — this was before Panther City made its debut also wearing purple — I decided to invest in some Seals gear. I felt like it was going to be the easiest thing to pull off in Baltimore. So I got my Seals hoodie, purple Seals hoodie, that arrived, when you're out of the office and you get stuff delivered to the office, you're not actually sure how quickly it arrived, but I'm quite certain that it arrived very quickly. And so as the holiday season approaches, whether it's Black Friday, Cyber Monday, or a last minute gift for the NLL fan in your life, or the aspiring NLL fan, head to Fanatics to find the NLL team shop. Fanatics is the only place to buy official National Lacrosse League fan gear. Do what I did and get yours in time for the upcoming season. Save 25% when you use the promo code IL20 at shopnll.com. shopnll.com/IL20. Promo code 20 and get 25% off. That's shopnll.com/IL20. Promo code IL20. The merchandise platform is really important to any league and to any team, but it's a part of the sports landscape that I think a lot of fans don't necessarily know that much about or give that much thought to necessarily. Fanatics is the, you know, kind of largest purveyor of this market. And so to me, the NLL being able to strike a deal with them seems really positive. What can you say about how it came to fruition and what it means for the league?
It's huge, Terry. And thanks for that read. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure the fine folks at Fanatics appreciate that excellent read and promo code. So we hope everyone jumps on and does all their Christmas shopping right away. And it's great because it gives fans, lacrosse fans of all walks of life, access to the NOL. So it was great. And I have to give kudos out to Kevin Morgan, who really cultivated that relationship over the years with the folks, starting with their president, Gary Gertzog, and then, with the whole staff there. And kudos to Jessica Berman for working on the contract and the agreement and really putting a together, the two of them put together just a fantastic new revenue stream for our league, and also great access to the fans for relevance, because everybody knows that sports merchandise, licensed merchandise on fans' backs and players' backs is great relevance for a league, for a local brand. This relationship also allows our teams to combine like ticket promotions with discounts on fan merchandise via the Fanatics platform. Get teams get to do creative combinations of tickets and food and merchandise, and that's what fans love when they attend games. So there's a real great opportunity. It's a new revenue stream for the league that the league has never had one like this before. Because all the merchandise really kind of sat in the arena and sat in the local markets and in some cases weren't featured at retail. We all know bricks and mortar retail is changing drastically. By the number of Amazon boxes that come to my door, I could tell you that the virtual online space for retail is the future, and Fanatics is the leader in that space. So we're honored to be partnered with them, and this is going to be great for the fans, going to be great for the relevance of the individual teams, going to be great for the teams to lever promotional campaigns that include merchandise for the fans to sell more tickets. And it's going to be, great for Fanatics because they're now really deep and committed into the lacrosse space.
Relevance, scale, in and the kind of overall consumption, the development of fans in new markets, all that sort of stuff. I mean, clearly, those are the conversations that you have when you're building any sports league. But there's also the function of the on-floor product, the development of the pipeline of talent, the, fairness of competition, and certainly a lot of development has been done there. I mentioned earlier the election of a new president and vice president, which was substantial in terms of changing the kind of long-term status quo of the relationship between the league and the Players Association. What does that actually mean? Like, in terms of if I'm not, a labor lawyer or somebody who follows labor relations in pro sports very closely, how do you describe the, kind of importance of new voices, particularly active players being involved at that level, and what it means for kind of the next steps that the league will take from the player standpoint?
It's significant and will show up on the timeline and the history of the NOL as being really, I think, transformational more than anything. Like the league was in 2016, when I walked in the door, the league was stale. It was stable, but it was stale. It hadn't grown in 10 years. It hadn't developed a strategy, and it wasn't modernized. It was kind of the same old for really 30 years, but more recently, the 10 years leading up to 2016, it hadn't innovated or sustained itself. And in the professional sports business, if you're not innovating and if you're not advancing and if you're not growing, you're dying. And that was the case with the league. I think a little bit of the case with the PLPA. I think any league is about the players. It's all about the players. The players are the product. The players are the most important thing. That's what fans buy tickets for. And it's the players' league. And I think the group of players realized that it was time to modernize the PLPA and kind of go along with the modernization of the league that they play in. And I give them a tremendous amount of credit. I was in their shoes 35 years ago. My last season, I was actually a player rep for the team I played for. And they want to make their league bigger. There's nothing more important, Terry, than the league partnering with its players. And it has always been our intention and strategy from day one of stepping into this role for us to partner with our players, truly partner, not just say we're partners, but really be partners, partners in different businesses, partners in revenue streams, partners in the growth and what it takes to grow the league. It's vital. And without that, the league's going to stale out as well and not grow. So we're really excited about Zach and Reed taking the leadership role there. They are ambitious. They are smart. They are innovative, and they want to grow. And those are the exact same things that the league wants. So we're pretty excited that there's new leadership there, and they're poised to grow, and we want to grow together.
This conversation could go on for minutes and hours longer, but I want to be respectful of your time on a holiday week. So one last question is about kind of the future of fan consumption. Certainly broadcast and digital consumption of games is a cornerstone to any league. And the BR Live partnership has given national access to games over the course of the last couple seasons. What is the future of the broadcast component of the NLL look like, both in terms of local regional and in terms of the US and Canada nationally?
We've got a media business now. We're in our third year with BR Live. Now this season will be the last year of a three-year deal with them. Our goal is to take it to another level, and that means continue to invest in the streaming and OTT platforms, because I think it's pretty clear, unless you live under a rock, that the future is digital and direct-to-consumer and streaming. It seems like every day now there's an article about streaming numbers increasing, cable, pay TV decreasing, and the advent of over-the-top streaming is clearly the future in every sport. But I think there's also an opportunity in this next round or this next level of media deal for the NLL to also add linear distribution, both in Canada and in the U.S., and also digital distribution worldwide. And that's what we're going to be looking for. That's what we're going to be discussing with our friends over at Turner and BR Live, as well as with other potential partners. So I would expect and say to everybody listening that the NLL's media business is looking to grow and go to the next level. That includes components of linear as well as direct-to-consumer over the top. Locally, last year was a record year. We had 9 of our 13 teams have local cable deals with local broadcasters. A number of them have renewed those deals for this year, including the very big market of New York with MSG. And we continue to encourage our teams to invest and distribute in their local markets, and expect that will continue to grow as well.
Well, Nick Sakevich, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations on all the work that's been done, particularly during a pandemic. We look forward to additional news about a 15th franchise, as well as seeing Panther City take shape as the 14th franchise, as well as, of course, the beginning of the 35th season. As you mentioned, a lot to be grateful for. As I mentioned, make sure to head to nllshop.com/IL20. Use the promo code IL20 to get your NLL gear, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks for having me on, Terry, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there, you, Inside Lacrosse, and all the fans and folks listening to the podcast. Happy Thanksgiving. We sure have a lot to be thankful for.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.